Welcome to Supersized Science, where we feature research and discoveries nationwide enabled by advanced computing technology and expertise at the Texas Advanced Computing Center of the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Jorge Salazar, a science writer at Tech, with a special podcast as we prepare for the Supercomputing Conference, SC23, in Denver, Colorado. The popularity of artificial intelligence has skyrocketed in 2023, thanks in large part to ChatGPT, which has created a Sputnik moment for AI, and has grabbed public attention, headlines, and funding. What's less known is that decades of scientific supercomputing and high-performance computing, HPC, laid the foundation for AI's moment. And now, science codes have good reason to adapt and follow the technological trends AI leaves in its wake. Here to talk about scientific HPC and AI is Dan Stanzione, Executive Director of TAC and Project Investigator of TAC's largest supercomputers, Frontera, Stampede 3, Lone Star 6, and now Vista, TAC's newest AI-focused system. Dr. Stanzione, welcome to the podcast.
Happy to be here.
How would you describe this moment as we're talking about AI, artificial intelligence, with the popularity of processing tools like ChatGPT?
Yeah, I think we've really hit an inflection point with AI. I've referred to it, many others have too. You know, the release of ChatGPT was sort of the Sputnik moment of the development of AI, meaning the, you know, in the trade press and in certain niche geeky nerd things, AI has been all the rage for 6 or 7 years. But I think ChatGPT really catapulted it into the public consciousness broadly, where you stopped reading about it in science and you started reading about it in People, or something like that. It's also made appropriators, legislatures, businesses highly aware of just how far we've come in terms of these capabilities and the transformative potential that it has and the way it's starting to touch people's lives. So I think technically not a huge amount changed with ChatGPT, but the perception changed just overnight really dramatically to sort of focus attention on this, the thing that has been, I think, gaining momentum for the last decade.
How is scientific supercomputing contributed to the rise of artificial intelligence, AI?
Yeah, so I think those two things are so deeply interrelated, right? Which is why people look to places like TAC and other supercomputing centers for AI leadership. As we haven't done as much in the algorithms, but from a hardware perspective, I think none of it happens without all the investments in HPC in the last few decades. In particular, so, you know, to get a little bit down in the weeds, one of the big things that allowed things like ChatGPT to happen was a Google paper about transformers that was released in 2018. It was called Attention is All You Need, and it was referring to attention was one of sort of three steps in the traditional neural nets, and they said, really, you can dispense with the others. And a consequence of that was it made it much easier to scale the models up to be much larger by removing some of the feedback and dependencies. So now we see things like the GPT models or Bard or Claude or any of these, you know, massive, especially large language models in AI. You know, they run across thousands of GPUs, right? And the way they do that is using a ton of the innovations from HPC, from fast interconnects to software standards, the MPI libraries, or how, which is the message passing interface that we use to run large parallel computation. It was built to run large parallel computation, is also how we do large AI models now. So there's been, algorithmically, they're somewhat different, but the hardware platforms have sort of converged, right? So doing large-scale AI and large-scale HPC are increasingly, they're not quite the same yet, but they're awfully similar, and they have a, you know, they infect each other in interesting ways.
Why should scientists care about all this? What should scientists be paying more attention to in these technology trends that have been carved out by AI?
I think there's really two important broad categories, and there's a lot of specific things within those. One, I think, is the relevance of AI techniques and the power of AI techniques in the scientific workflow one way or another. And there's no substitute for physics and physics-based modeling, ultimately. If we went with purely AI models where we currently use physics-based models, there's all sorts of potential for bad predictions and disaster. But it's like any other tool that has its limits, right? It's really going to a, you know, instead of an equation-based or differential equation, first principles-based model, it's a statistics-based model when we use AI. But that doesn't mean there aren't a lot of places where that can be awfully helpful, from reducing the number of ensemble members you have to work if you're sweeping parameters to design a system, from, you know, putting in physics-constrained models as surrogates to enhance the rate of predictions. You know, once we understand the basic mechanisms in, say, climate prediction, we can probably make faster weather predictions if we put in AI surrogates and just occasionally check them with the physics models. In finding anomalies in data, you know, whether you're doing astrophysics or biology or whatever it is, right? If you have a bunch of instrument data, being able to pick out interesting or anomalous data in those data streams is something AI is going to be really good at. So there's a whole range of applications where using AI in science is going to be important. And then the other one I've already touched on, which is AI is going to drive what hardware we have, right? So if we want to keep moving forward in scientific computing, we need to learn to exploit that hardware and exploit mixed precision and make use of these, exploit, say, matrix operations as opposed to vector operations, because a lot of, you know, 4x4 matrices is the so-called tensor cores and the matrix operations that AI hardware is going to be really good at. The more we can build that into algorithms, the more cost-effective we're going to be in delivering scientific computing. So I think those are really the two big categories, where we use AI in the scientific workflow and where we exploit AI hardware for traditional scientific computation.
In a nutshell, how has this rise of AI changed what tech is doing?
Like I said, I think there's so much convergence that it's sort of only natural for our infrastructure to start to be exploited for AI. I think it has changed the emphasis in several ways. One is, you know, there's a big split among our traditional computing users between sort of things that still work on traditional CPUs only versus GPU adoption, whereas AI is whole hog into GPUs, right? And it's made us think about rebalancing a little bit what our investments are and to increase our GPU investments around the AI users, because we're just starting to see this, you know, new class of users with an endless thirst for training cycles, just like we used to see with our astrophysicists and CPU cycles. Well, still see, but now we have these new demands as well that we have to balance. I think there's the ways we support and tune it, which involves learning some new language and some new codes, but it's still fundamentally the same process. But we just need to be aware of, you know, where we used to look at materials, pipelines, and climate and astronomy and things like that. Now we have to, you know, add AI into the workflows and have AI incorporated into many of the workflows. And then I think, like any other organization, we're evaluating where we use AI internally, right? Whether it's in our help and support, whether it's in our monitoring of hardware and fault detection. You know, we need to incorporate AI into our operations just like every other organization does, into how we interact with our users and how we monitor our infrastructure.
Tech just announced a new supercomputing system, Vista. It's an AI-focused supercomputer for the open science community. In what ways will Vista prepare researchers to harness AI as a new tool in the scientific domain?
Yeah, so I think Vista does several things for us. One, it does represent that new balance that we started to see with the last Lone Star system, Lone Star 6, right? In terms of our split between CPU and GPU investments, this is the first system we've done where I think the GPU investment is larger than the CPU investment. And again, it is to ramp up our capabilities in this sort of large-scale training to support the future National AI Research Resource, but to just meet the needs of users in this space. It also is an architectural step for us in a different direction. We have this very tight coupling of a CPU built essentially to interface to a GPU with the ARM-based NVIDIA Grace CPUs that'll be in the machine. And then we're still preserving some CPU-only nodes, but moving into ARM for a number of reasons, power and efficiency being one, and having a single programming environment for our users across AI and not AI is the other. But it's dipping our toes into the outside of the x86 space for nodes and into the ARM space for the first time in a production system for us. Because as we look to the future and options for our leadership facility system, Horizon, in a couple of years, it may look more like a Vista. So it's a place for our users to start experimenting with migrating their codes and do that. And also it will be our single largest training resource at the same time with even more GPU capability than Lone Star had and certainly more than Frontera had. So yeah, I mean, we're still moving forward both in that sort of traditional science vein for the things that aren't ready to use GPUs and other accelerators and preserving a pretty significant CPU footprint. But we've definitely changed the balance around AI and the investment in GPUs.
Could you speak to, looking forward, how is AI hardware and software evolving and entering tech's overall computing strategy?
You know, we do see Vista as a stepping stone from where we were with Frontera in 2019, you know, our last really large leadership system to the next one that'll be named Horizon. And we think Vista is possible, maybe likely, architectural direction for that. Again, tighter coupling of CPU and GPU, a slightly bigger focus on GPUs, referencing the increased amount of AI in our workloads. We're still committed to having a large CPU-based resource as well, because we still see just an awfully large footprint in our current set of scientific users that aren't ready or don't have algorithms that are suited to using GPUs to their fullest at the moment. So we'd like to preserve, you know, order a million cores of CPU in the next system to support those users. At the same time, I think we'll be applying sort of gentle pressure to move towards these mixed precision techniques and other things that really exploit AI hardware and AI techniques, because we're going to boost efficiency and, more importantly, maybe power efficiency moving forward for just the sort of raw operations per watt we can get. We're better off on the GPUs. We can't always realize those with the state of software. You know, we might get a higher efficiency on a CPU than we do on a GPU in terms of the percent of those operations we can use. But in the long run, it's about 5 times better per watt, you know, to run operations through GPUs. So, and frankly, the mixed precision stuff helps out whether you're using GPUs or CPUs. So we're going to be encouraging users to make more use of mixed precision, to look at exploiting GPUs wherever they can, because it's sort of necessary for our, you know, environmental footprint, for our operations costs, and just general power efficiency moving forward. At the same time, we recognize that in the next 2 to 3 years, we're not going to change all the software that's ever been written in the history of humanity to take advantage of this. So, you know, we'll still have a pretty significant traditional scientific computing capability along with our AI capability in the next system. And that balance will probably continue to shift based on how fast and how much of our workload we see that can really exploit this hardware moving forward in the years to come.
You've been listening to Dan Stanzione of TAC. Supersized Science is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world, brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and not of the University of Texas at Austin. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.